Here on Explaining Brazil, we always look to break down the most important topics concerning the country, contextualizing them in a way that helps you understand what's going on, why it's happening, and what's bound to come next. But sometimes it's good to keep an eye on what your neighbours are up to. And that's why this week, with presidential elections coming into view, we're talking about Argentina, their controversial frontrunner, and how the vote across the border is set to affect things in Brazil. I'm Ewan Marshall, Deputy Editor of the Brazilian Report, and this is Explaining Brazil. If you like Explaining Brazil, you should subscribe to The Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We're an independent organisation funded by our subscribers, and you can help us stay independent and continue to produce award-winning journalism. And if you're already a subscriber, you can go the extra mile and join our Buy Me a Coffee fan page, and in return, you'll get exclusive perks like special newsletters and behind-the-scenes content, as well as a shout-out here in our podcast. And today I'd like to thank our Buy Me a Coffee members: Andrei Novoseltsev, Tom Nolan, Marta Marchins, Pan Ludwig, Leslie Seal, Caroline Hubert, Mark Hillary, John Thomas III, Louise Renz, Erwan Menais, Orlando Black, Steve Knapp, Aaron Berger, James Coney, Kars Vriesvik, Alistair Townsend, Peter Abramson, Jim Awofadeju, Michael Fryer, Mila Renacido, David Dixon, Josetto Zistankovic, Emerging Market Muser, Yarden Eftach, Tonika Thompson, Anderson Da Silva, Kat Kramer, Peter Suffren, Anna Lund, and someone who chose to remain anonymous. And our Buy Me a Coffee members come from all over the world, so please, if we're butchering the pronunciation of your name, do send us an email. And if you too believe in the importance of independent journalism, and if you want to hear your name on our podcast, go to buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report and subscribe to one of the membership levels. Click on buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report to learn more. Down all the latest news and find out what to expect from the upcoming Argentinian election, we reached out to our Latin America editor Ignacio Portes, who's in Buenos Aires. Great to speak with you again, Ignacio.
Hey, everyone, good to be back.
So, to kick things off, if you could just help situate our listeners, because in August we had the primaries, why are they important?
Right, so we had the primary elections a couple of weeks ago, which basically serve two functions at the same time. The formal function is that each of the coalitions that run for president and for the other positions decide their candidate for each position. So, for example, if as it happened in the center-right anti-Peronist coalition, you have a more centrist candidate and a more right-wing candidate, as they did, Patricia Bullrich being the more right-wing candidate and Horacio Rodríguez Larreta being the more centrist candidate, you decide that in the primary, and whoever gets more votes, let's say, goes on to the next round. Well, if you just have one candidate, as the ruling party had or the Milei party had, you just run that candidate and that's it. It's just a formality, the primary. But the total of votes you see in the primary, which are mandatory, in which every Argentinian has to vote by law, gives you a really good indication, better than any poll available in Argentina, of how the final results are going to be. Primary results have been very predictive of who is going to win, or at least have been the best predictor of who is going to win the election, the proper presidential election that happens a couple of months afterwards. Since they exist. So the fact that Milei came first with around 30% of the vote, and the other candidates had 28% for the center-right coalition and 27% for Massa, the government candidate, now mean that Milei is seen as the favorite by everyone.
And you mentioned the primary election winner there, the libertarian economist Javier Milei. A couple of years ago, in episode 178, we were actually on this podcast introducing Milei, this kind of madcap far-right maverick who'd burst onto the scene in Argentina. Did you imagine back then that you might be here 2 years later discussing his status as favorite to be the country's next president?
Yeah, a chance for sure. I mean, we've seen similar phenomenon in Brazil with Bolsonaro, in the US with Trump, cast in Chile. We've seen this happen many times already. So that is not so surprising. But what was surprising, I mean, not fully surprising either, but is that he beat all pollsters' expectations. This is not the first time that pollsters get it wrong in Argentina. In fact, they get it more wrong than right. But everyone was saying Milei would come third, and that actually the center right would be first, and Peronism maybe second. The poll said roughly they expected like 35% for the center right, 30% maybe for the center left, and around 20% for Milei. And it didn't happen like that. Milei. I mean, this formed a consensus that Milei would come third, but the consensus was completely wrong, really. And everyone bought a little bit into that consensus. Me too. In the last few weeks, when the polls were saying this, but you always know that the polls are going to fail, but you never know in which direction. And in this case, they failed in Milei's direction. He did much better than pollsters expected. Some of the pollsters say this is because he improved in the days after the polling blackout. And some other hypotheses say that he just does much better outside of Buenos Aires, which is where pollsters do most of their investigations. So there's a few hypotheses as to why the pollsters got it wrong, but they definitely got it wrong. And Milei outperformed everyone, what everyone expected, probably even what he himself expected.
So, as I said, we talked about Milei here 2 years ago, and already back then he was a bit of a colourful character with his crazy hair and outlandish statements.
Yeah.
But we know a lot more about him now, don't we? So bring us up to speed on the weird and maybe not so wonderful world of Javier Milei.
Yeah, well, we have been getting to know him more and more as the probability of winning and him becoming an important figure in Argentina grew. Journalists started getting deeper into his figure, trying to understand where he comes from, what he thinks, and everything that surrounds him, the world, the people around him, which the entourage that he has around it, which is always important in any government. So what we know about him, to recap a little bit, is that ideologically you could see some differences with Trump or Bolsonaro in the fact that his central ideological belief is economic. He's more neoliberal than neoliberals. He is more market. He's a complete market fundamentalist. He believes in the market as a solution for really almost everything. And he really, when he sees a problem, his first and second and probably third instinct is to blame the state for it. So we have seen how far these beliefs go, in the sense that journalists have asked him about, okay, does the free market apply to everything? Would it be a solution to everything? Would it apply to organ donors? Would it be better to have, instead of having the state, administrating when someone dies and who they give the organs to, would it be better to have a free market for organs? And Milei, actually, who is a very candid person in many ways, he actually said, oh, yes, it would be better. and this created one of the scandals that his campaign had to navigate during the last year, playing down what he said, saying, well, this is just something philosophical that he theoretically says, but he's not going to legalize organ markets in Argentina. But if you actually push him enough, he will eventually confess, let's say, that he actually believes that that is a better solution, that the state dealing with this basic health issues. And this applies to a lot of things, but this is the most extreme, obvious case in which sounds horrific to everyone, that people would sell their kidney online for some money to go to university or whatever. But so this goes to what 99% of people believe. So it's horrific. It's like shocking, and the campaign wants to play it down, but this is what he thinks, and that is important to understand what he would do in a certain when put before a difficult decision, Milei will think in market terms and how the market would solve it. Even if he cannot do it in practice because the government and the laws and the real politics situation of each particular moment limits him, he will be thinking in market terms as a solution to most things. So that is one aspect of him that we learn more about in the last few months as his figure became more prominent. The other aspect that has come to prominence is his more mystical belief. His more mystical beliefs, his more extravagant personalities, his relationships with his family, with his dogs, all of his private life. We wrote a story about a book that came out in Argentina it's called The Madman, El Loco in Spanish. This is a journalist who investigated what Milei, a lot of Milei's private and personal life, but in regards of how it affects his political decisions, right? This journalist, González is his surname from the Perfil editorial in Buenos Aires. He says that Milei, he describes Milei as a person that is like very similar to the Joker movie, right? In that we saw in theaters a couple of years ago, a person with conflicts with his family, very hard to socialize with other people throughout his life, that only had his sister as a close person in which he trusted, a very violent relationship with his family, like a bullied person, something like that. And he describes how that made him a bit of a particular person with such a close relationship to his dog, a giant English Mastiff, that when the dog died, he went into a complete mental crisis that on the one hand, he found out about how to clone dead dogs. And I think the dogs hadn't died already, but when the dog was dying, he found how to clone dogs in how to purchase services in the US to clone dogs. And he sent his dog's DNA to be cloned in the United States. And now he has 5 cloned dogs of his original dog that is now dead. 5 absolutely gigantic dogs that are bigger than him, that have, according to many reports, beaten him in many times, that he has an actually very troubled relationship with this giant 5 dogs, but that keep him company in some ways, as dogs do, you know, very loyal people or animals. And he calls them their babies. He kind of infantilizes them. He talks about his dogs on TV and so on. But it is a pretty unsettling, crazy aspect of him. And there's also the more mystical side of him that is kind of related to all this, that when his dog died, he started to consult mediums and spiritual wacky healers that he found online. And the mediums connected him with his dead dog. And suddenly the mediums became important in political decision making, because when he needed to make an important decision, he wanted to have the inspiration of his dead dog, and the medium connected him with that. And it's all a bit crazy to read, but I think it is mostly real. It's not an exaggeration. He hasn't come out and said it's false. He just says, well, this is something that the press says to try to destroy my public image, which is partly true, because the press that at some point helped him rise now doesn't like him so much. A lot of Buenos Aires establishment was happy to let Milei's figure become popular. We talk about this in the website in our story about the crazy personality of Milei. How well they sent him, they invited him on TV. They used him for example, Macri, the former right-wing former president of Argentina, used Milei a lot to attack his internal centrist rivals in his party. He sent him to his friendly TV channels to do that. Others used him for other purposes. The Peronist side, the government people also liked Milei as an idea, because he would possibly divide the right-wing vote. So many people allowed him to grow. But now that he has become big and challenging, they have tried to attack him more. And we have seen more of this crazy side of him discussed on public TV. But they, as we said on our story, that can fail. That can he might have become too big for them to destroy him now. And the elections prove so, that now his figure is too big to try to demolish what they built. And now he is the favorite to win the next presidential election, despite all of this crazy side that is starting to come out more about his personality in the last few weeks or months.
And as you noted in your work for the Brazilian Report, there seemed to be a kind of concerted effort from the Argentinian press to really force that wacky side, potentially in a way to stop him from winning. So before we bring this story really up to date, tell us briefly about the two candidates that he did overcome in the primary. That's the government candidate Sergio Massa and the conservative Patricia Bullrich.
Right. Really, the expectation was that the government is struggling so much with, as you know, probably that Argentina has above 100% inflation and still rising, like the forecasters expect 200, possibly 300 inflation next year. So that the situation in that sense is quite out of control. And so the government was always not a favorite to win this election. And the society is also moving right wing in terms of ideology. After years in which the center left was more of a consensus, society is now moving right in terms of economic discussions, in terms of how to fight crime and so on. So the government candidate was always seen as likely to struggle, but potentially finishing second, probably because Peronism has never finished worse than second in all this history. Maybe this could be the first time it finishes third, if it does. And the favorites, the candidate of the government is Sergio Massa, as you said, the economy minister of this troubled government, especially in terms of economics. So it's a difficult position for Massa to defend the economic administration of this government. And the candidate to win was whoever won the center-right anti-Peronist primary between Patricia Bullrich, former security minister of President Macri, as we said, and the Buenos Aires city mayor, Horacio Rodríguez Larreta, who is more of a centrist. Bullrich won that primary, which kind of confirmed that the society is moving right, but she didn't win it as strongly as she would have expected. She only got 17% of the votes, plus 10% of the vote that Larreta got. That totals 27% for the more moderate right-wing coalition, more traditional right in Argentina. And Milei got 30% just with little appearance on TV, with not so many appearances on TV, with a lot of very good campaigning on social media. That was his forte, I believe. He didn't have a strong party structure. He didn't have a strong... he didn't completely dominate the media or anything, but he was very strong on TikTok, very strong on Twitter, very strong on Instagram. And he had a lot of, I think, enthusiasm amongst normal people, common people outside of journalism, outside of traditional politics, outside of intellectuals, experts, and so on. A lot of common people are just enthusiastic about this different figure that is very angry about the political establishment, about what he describes as a political caste, like the caste system in India, right? A very rigid system which allows no outsiders in, which favors insiders, which is how he describes the Argentinian political system, like a duopoly of people who just try to keep their privileges, right? And people are feeling that is an accurate description of the current political situation. Just to they see Argentina's politicians as just worrying about themselves, as just immersed in this palace discussions about how to keep their power, how to preserve their interests and their interests of inside lobbyists and generally insiders, right? And not very worried about the normal concerns of people, of everyday citizens, such as inflation, crime, and so on. And Milei comes with an agenda that promises to solve these things. He has a tough on crime line, and he says he will dollarize the economy to solve inflation. And that sounds attractive to many people. And that is why... that and his very angry way of delivering his message, I think, resonated with voters and made him a very strong candidate.
And speaking of the way that he delivers his message, Milei and the other leading candidates held a debate on Sunday. So how did that go?
Yes.
Who were the winners? Who were the losers?
Well, it's always very hard to know who won a debate, right? If it's hard to, you can't even trust the polls. How can you trust your own, just your perception of, on a debate? But what you saw certainly was that Milei came into the debate with a much different posture than usually. He changed his strategy. As he's no longer the outsider now, right? He's now the favorite to win. So he had a more, he tried to avoid a public meltdown, let's say, tried to not scare on the fence voters, people who maybe are thinking, okay, I like Bullrich, but since now Milei has more chances to win, I'll do the pragmatic right-wing vote and vote for whoever gets the government out, the Peronist party out of government. I think his strategy was, okay, let's appear normal, let's appear calm, let's appear like a normal person that can have a peaceful dialogue, don't get angry, don't scream at people, don't be rude, and so on. Appear presidential, right? That was his strategy in the debate. And it went well for him in the sense that he didn't lose, at least. He is winning the race, and he didn't do anything egregiously stupid that might lose him massive votes. That is often what the debate is about. Just don't do something terrible that will go viral and make you look like a fool. And he managed that very comfortably. Actually, I think the candidate that struggled the most was Bullrich, who is his direct rival for right-wing votes right now. She was stuttered a lot when asked about the economy. Milei asked him a couple of technical questions about the economy, and she's not an economic expert, and she really didn't know what to say. And and Massa, the government candidate, was constantly attacked about inflation and about multiple government scandals. There was a sex scandal this week with a prominent Peronist politician that was on the news and on Twitter and on social networks every minute. So the other candidates were a lot on the defensive, and Milei was comfortable. So I think that, if anything, the debate went pretty decently for Milei.
And I understand that Milei has gotten into a bit of trouble with the Catholic Church.
Right.
What's the story there? And could that hurt his chances at all?
Yes, that was one of the... They tried to attack him with the Catholic Church stuff. Yes, sure, it could hurt him. Argentina is a Catholic country. It's not a... Well, you know how Catholicism is in Latin America often. It is a religion that many are identify with, but not... It's not like the evangelical belief that it usually is more strong, more strongly held, right? That more central to the identities of people. Catholicism is more popular, but not as intense, let's say. So people can be Catholic and still vote for Milei, even if the church says that Milei is bad. So yeah, what happened basically is that a couple of years ago, Milei had some extremely, extremely brutal words against Pope Francis, which is the Argentine Pope, the first non-European Pope that we had in history, if I'm not wrong about my Catholic history here, but I think so. Milei described the Pope as actually being the devil, as being the he's a bit of a mystical person. Milei, as we said, he's having a weird conversion to Judaism now. Is that's sort of another chapter, but he's having a bit of a strange spiritual conversion too. But so he speaks in mystical terms sometimes, in very religious terms, and so he might actually think that the Pope is the devil or something like that. But he actually said something like that. He said he was an imposter and actually the devil, pretending to be the envoy of God, something like that. All of this because he's an advocate of social justice causes, the current Pope. He's a person that has always been identified with working with the poor and favoring distribution of income and so on. And he's generally positively seen by center-left leaders in the region, by AMLO, by López Obrador, the president of Mexico, by Peronism, and so on. So, yeah, Milei had some very, very harsh words against the Pope before being a presidential candidate. But some of those words he repeated later. He actually had some bad words against the Pope, not as strong, but in his latest interview with Tucker Carlson, the U.S. right-wing host, former Fox News host who came to Argentina to interview Milei after his primary victory. So all these harsh words that Milei had against the Pope, kind of accusing him almost of being a communist, were brought by Massa during the debate, saying you should ask the Pope, you should ask for forgiveness because you said these terrible words about the most important Argentine person in history, and Argentines admire the Pope, and so on and so forth. And Milei just said, well, he tried to punt to avoid a bit the question. He said, well, I'm sorry if I use too strong words. The Pope is welcome to come to Argentina if he wants, as a leader of a religion and as a leader of another state. He is welcome in Argentina. We will not have a problem. He wants to come to visit. He tried to play it down, basically. Said he was an excess that he said many years ago and that it didn't matter. But sure, it could hurt him a little bit. But I think, and the church actually, per se, has been speaking out against Milei in public rally, not in rallies, but in church events. You see banners that criticize Milei for his words. There was a public mass held to defend the Pope against the criticism of Milei and so on. So there has been a little bit of a church and peronism against Milei in the last few weeks in Argentina. And it could hurt him a little bit for sure. But I think the people who are convinced of voting for him, as we saw in the US, right, with Trump, I think Trump was attacked for not being really religious, for not being not really caring about what the right-wing fundamentalist religious base of voters believed in, but they voted for him anyway because they agreed with other stuff that actually was more important to them with other of his proposals. So I think he might lose a couple of votes due to this, but overall, I think that the people that are decided to vote for Milei and that want to vote for Milei will overall still vote for him despite these problems.
And Ignacio, you touched on this earlier, but it really seems to be the economic prospect of Milei that has most concerned about his potential victory. You mentioned his promises of dollarization, but what else has he said he'd do, and what might that entail for Argentina's near-term future?
Right, well, this is the biggest issue really right now in Argentina. I mean, the figure of Milei is insanely colorful, insanely crazy. Like, there's a lot to talk about. It's an incredibly interesting figure. Everything that surrounds him is interesting. There's a lot of colorful characters, let's say, in his entourage that I'm not sure we have the time to go into them, but you can spend a lot of time discussing that, and it's fun, it's colorful in journalistic terms. But what really concerns Argentinians right now is inflation, is what to do with the economy, right? And as we said, Milei has this dollarization proposal, which is in some ways reminiscent of what Argentina saw in the 1990s in terms of what Argentina did in the 1990s was just fixing the value of the peso to the dollar. One peso equaled $1, a currency peg or convertibility, as they called it here. But this is a much more extreme proposal in terms of just eliminating the peso, eliminating the central bank, and just transacting in dollars in Argentina, right? But yeah, the problem with his proposal is it is technically very hard to do in a country that has absolutely no dollars. The state at least has absolutely no dollars. It just has debts and debts and debts and debts. And to dollarize, this is, I don't want to get too technical, but basically what you need to understand is to dollarize, which is a thing that only a few countries have done in history, you need to convert all the circulating currency that you have, in this case, the circulating pesos, which are billions and billions of dollars in equivalent pesos. And you also need to convert all the deposits of people in banks, all the savings of people, that are denominated in pesos into dollars. You also need to convert all contracts into dollars, and you need to convert all of the bonds that Argentina, all of the debt bonds that Argentina issued, which are many of them issued in pesos, into dollars, right? And for most of those things, you need a bunch of dollars. You need billions and billions of US dollars to tell people, okay, bring us your pesos to the to the bank clerk, and we'll give you dollars in exchange, right? And now we're going to deal with dollars and no longer with this rapidly depreciating pesos that you all hate, which sounds very nice, but you need the dollars to do that exchange, right? You know what I mean? The state needs to have the dollars somewhere to give them to citizens in exchange for their rapidly depreciating pesos. And Argentina has no dollars. It has almost zero, in some ways, negative dollars because it owes money to everyone. And so it is very hard to do technically what Milei wants to do right now. Argentina could, Milei's technical advisors in this matter are saying, okay, maybe we can ask for some giant billions, tens of billions of dollars in loans in order to be able to do this, right? We ask for massive loans and we give those loan dollars to depositors and to people who simply have pesos in their houses. And in that way, we do the dollarization. But Argentina cannot raise debt right now. It is Argentinian bonds are trading at nearly default prices at 20% of their face value because Argentina is in default or very near default in many ways. Bondholders think Argentina cannot pay its debts currently. And that means that they would not lend more money to Argentina under normal circumstances to do this very wild, very risky project of dollarizing the economy with loan money. So basically, the project entails asking for massive loans that it's very hard that anyone would actually offer to Argentina. Yeah, and if not, it starts getting more and more wacky. It would demand Argentina selling a lot of its assets or selling some part of its pension funds or doing some extreme things in order to go ahead with this project. And when Milei and Milei's advisors went to the U.S. to try to sell these ideas, reportedly the bankers did not believe in him too much. They said, this doesn't sound good. And Argentina's stock market has reflected that since Milei won. It has gone pretty steadily down since Milei's victory, reflecting this lack of confidence in Milei's dollarization plans, which really sounds a bit paradoxical, right? Because markets generally like pro-market people, and we're talking about a market fundamentalist. But this very market fundamentalist person is not currently very much liked by markets. The investors are not believing too much in his plans currently. So there's a big, big question mark in terms of what would he do? How would he follow through with his promises, with the big promises that he's making to people about offering a stable currency and so on? So yeah, the economic question will be a massive question mark if Milei ends up winning.
Ignacio, do results in Argentina tend to shift between the primary and the real election? Or did that Milei victory in the primary basically seal the fate of his competitors? Or is there some sort of precedent for this race to be maybe turned on its head?
No, there's no precedent of the primary winner not winning. But we've never had such a close primary race, on the other hand. It was very tight. Milei got 30, the center right got 28, Massa got 27. It's very close, right? So, and we have had 3-point swings or even 5, 6, 7-point swings between primaries and general elections in the past. So the primaries have been the best indicator of where things actually stand. But it doesn't mean that Milei is the winner because the difference is very narrow. Currently, pollsters believe that Milei is doing a bit better than what he did in the primary. They are saying that he is getting some of the Bullrich vote, that he's polling close to 35%, and that he would be a certain to qualify to the runoff at least. So he's still seen as the favorite, but definitely I wouldn't say the race is over. I would say that he's the favorite for sure, and that the best indicator that we usually have had in modern Argentine history is the result of the primaries, and that showed that people like Milei, a lot of people like Milei. So he's the favorite, but he's not already the winner. That would be, I think, the most accurate assessment.
And obviously, this is a Brazil-based podcast, so it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask what having Milei next door as president could mean for Brazil, right, and South America as a whole.
Yeah, well,
The Mercosur question, which is what we often discuss in our website, is very clear for Milei. He doesn't like the Mercosur trade union. He believes it's too protectionist. He wants to step out of it. He wants to have free trade with all of the world. So it would be a blow for the Mercosur trade agreement, which Brazil generally is fond of. It's a good agreement for Brazil. Brazil has historically defended it, at least the current government for sure. Lula likes it. But the current Argentinian government likes it too, because it is more protectionist, right? So in that sense, that would influence Brazil certainly. And the other factor, I think, for Brazilian politics and is that it would be a victory for this kind of hard right candidates that had been doing pretty poorly in the last couple of years, right? We saw Trump defeated in the U.S. We saw Bolsonaro defeated in Brazil. They were having a bit of a tough time. And suddenly this guy with the crazy hair in Argentina is winning and is kind of proving that their ideas have a bit of currency, right? Of current value. I think it's a boost for the far right ideas in the continent. I think that the fact that Tucker Carlson, which is one of the most important figures in this hard right movement in the continent, came to Argentina, visited Milei, interviewed Argentina, was very enthusiastic about extolling his virtues and discussing how crazy Argentina is and how reasonable Milei is in comparison. It shows how this has revived a bit of the maybe lost enthusiasm that we had seen, especially we saw it a lot in Brazil, right? After Bolsonaro fell, Lula's approval ratings after winning actually rose farther. So the right-wing movement was a bit hit in Brazil and elsewhere. And I think the rise of Milei will give a new card, right? A new rhetorical card for Bolsonaro and his allies and his supporters to say, look, you see, people still like our ideas. Maybe, I don't know, they stole the election in Brazil or whatever they say, but people still see in other countries that our ideas are right. And so I think they would give them a political boost in that sense to the more right-wing alternatives in the continent.
Thanks, Ignacio. Great to have you on as always.
All right, Ewan. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
If you like Explaining Brazil, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. It only takes a second and it will help us reach a wider audience. Or better yet, subscribe to The Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We have a subscription-based business model and your memberships fuel our journalism and keep us going and growing. Thanks to our subscribers, we've been able to cover Brazil and Latin America extensively, and our work has won and been shortlisted for several international journalism awards. More recently, our newsletters won the Best Newsletter Prize in the Americas from the World Association of Newspapers and News Publishers for a small or local newsroom. And in order to keep doing that work, we need your support. So go to brazilian.report/subscribe. I'm Ewan Marshall. Thanks for listening, and Explaining Brazil will be back next week.